is Hoss Johnson.
And this is Warren Hull, and here's our genial host, John Martin. Hello.
Don, they're like you. They
are all well.
They're all friends of yours. Tell us, what is one of the secrets of the affectionate bowl that the old Al Johnson has on all his guests, John?
Well, I presume it's those kind and friendly faces that stay with us all the time and say hello as you come in, and glad to see you, and sort of cheerio, welcome, you know?
Yes, every time they come back, the same faces. It does make them feel at home, doesn't it, John?
Happy.
Who's been here a long, long time?
Well, Mr. Mitchell, 39 years. Bushy, 38 years. Dick, 30 years.
Oh, boy. Two of them are going to be on our show tonight. Move over, John, and let me get the first one right now. Folks, one of the long, familiar faces, well, and one of the well-known voices that every regular and most of the periodic guests at the Algonquin knows, is the chief operator of the hotel switchboard here. We think she knows everything, literally everything that goes on around the hotel. Very little escapes her. You all Algonquinites probably wouldn't know the name Lovilla Bush, but you'll all know her when I say, here's Bushy. Hey, right in front of her, and I'll hold you just like that, Bushy. I saw what you and Warren were doing over there, Bushy.
You did. You see too much.
He was holding your hand and patting it, I know. So you've been here 34 years?
Yes, that's so.
Oh, my. And I bet you had a lot of fun. Tell me.
What? Quite a lot.
Uh-huh. If somebody should offer you a job somewhere else at double the price, would you take it?
I would not.
Why not?
Because this is my home.
You love it like
I love it.
Well, you've lived here most of your life, haven't you?
I have.
Say, let's go back a little bit in the early days of the Algonquin. Who are some of the famous guests that you recall back in the early days?
Irene Castle.
Uh-huh.
Hedda Hopper.
Yeah.
Luella Parsons. Jean Paulette. Alan Dwan. Oh,
you could go on and on.
I could go on forever.
Uh-huh, and the Fairbanks and all those people.
Oh, yes, and the Drews and the Barrymores.
Uh-huh, and Bushy, I've gotten a lot of tales about you from some of those old ones and some of the new ones.
I hope they're good.
They are good, most of them. For instance, they tell me... they tell me that when you get a call by on your board and they ask for a guest, and the guest is not here... You can find them. Is that right?
That's quite correct.
Always get your man?
Always get my man.
Even if he's out of town?
Oh, yes.
Suppose he's got an unlisted phone number in Hollywood.
I'd get it.
You really would?
I would.
Let's give you a little test here. Suppose somebody should call for me here at Algonquin next July. Where would you look for me?
First, I'd go down to Texas, and then when I get into Texas, I'd yell to Wembley, and I'd find you.
Who's been talking to you?
Oh.
Well, I guess you're right about that. And also, I hear that you've got a reputation as being sort of a pretty good agent for friends who are, let's say, temporarily at liberty.
Yes, I try to get everybody a job.
Can you recall someone case like that?
Yes.
Yeah?
I got a young man by the name of Billy Reardon, a job with Irene Castle at one time as her dancing partner.
Well, you know everything that's going on, don't you?
Oh, you bet.
Uh-huh.
Nothing escapes me.
You're right about that. I remember calling Viraj Frackett, one of our Vox Papas who lives here the other day, and you said, look, have you got to talk to him? I said, yes. Is it important? I said, yes. What do you want to talk to him about? Do you do that way to all your guests?
Oh, yes. I have to know first.
That's what I call real protection, and it does. I know it is a service that your regulars appreciate, Bushy. Say, the atmosphere around here, of course, is literature and theater and interesting people from all over. I suppose you make all the shows on Broadway, don't you?
No, I see enough acting around here.
You mean really acting, huh?
Yes.
Do they come and talk to you at the switchboard?
Yes.
Uh-huh. They ask you to do little queer things for them?
Oh, no. They're all very nice, and I love doing everything for them.
Who are some of the guests here now, Bushy?
Judith Evelyn.
Yeah.
Nina Post. Nancy Walker.
Uh-huh. Say, are Louis Bromfield and George Hawkins here yet?
No, but they're coming tomorrow. They're great friends of mine.
Every time I've been around here, I've seen those two.
Yes, they come all the time when they're in town.
Well, they're good friends of ours. Bush, it's a lot of fun talking to you. And we got to move on, though, because Warren has got an interesting person coming up next. And I happen to know that you're a wonderful housekeeper. So I know you're going to appreciate what I've got for you now. It's 12 envelopes of Lipton's Noodle Peacemaking. All you see right now are the envelopes, but I'm thinking about what's in them. Grand chickeny flavor and the golden egg noodles and such convenience. No cans to open, just empty a Lipton envelope in boiling water and cook it 7 minutes. You get fresh cooked taste too because you fresh cook the making yourself. And if it's savings you're after, each one of those Lipton envelopes gives you almost a full quart of soup and half again as much as most canned soups give you. So you can afford to enjoy Lipton's beauty too often. And Bushy, something else from Lipton. For your interesting collection of antique cups, here are three of those beautiful cups and saucers, a Rosenthal, a Limoges, and an English Luster, and Reed and Barton's pointed antique pattern sterling silver service for your home. Thank you a lot, Bushy. We've enjoyed having you.
Well, among all the blithe spirits who have haunted the warm, old, oaken atmosphere of the Algonquin lobby, none is blither and lither and lovelier than this blithe spirit in the flesh, Miss Peggy Wood.
Good evening. I hope you didn't confuse me with the oak paneling.
No,
you said the old
never
oak
could, never could. Miss Wood, you're not a native New Yorker. Of course, nobody in New York is.
No. Oh, I'm a native Brooklyner. I was born in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Well, why don't you laugh?
That's funny.
Ever since I was a little girl and went to vaudeville shows, no matter whether there were them bums or whether there was DeRocher or anybody, they always laughed when Brooklyn was mentioned. And here you don't... You're going to start a trend?
A trend, yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad.
What's that little wooden, looks like a decoration that you're wearing?
Wooden?
No.
I'll have you know that is silk.
Oh, it is? That's right.
That is silk, and it is green and one way, and has a tiny little red, white, and blue thing. That is a decoration from the War Department that came to me the other day.
Well, what? What is it?
I was decorated. That's a civilian services emblem, and that is for my services overseas.
Who pinned it on you?
It wasn't pinned on me.
No?
No. I wanted to have the decoration given to me by General Eisenhower with kisses on both cheeks. Oh, dear, I didn't want that. It came third-class mail stuffed through the letterbox.
Well, that's all right. Say, what were you doing over there?
Well, I took my shirt over to play the USO, played it in England and in France.
Mm-hmm. What time of year?
The same time of year that this is. It's the same kind of weather, only you didn't know about it here because we weren't allowed to talk about it.
Oh.
You see, that was a military secret, that weather, but it was just as bad, almost as bad. Maybe not quite as much snow, but enough.
How did you like doing your part in lovely silken gowns?
Well, that was the lovely part. You see, you went over with a certain amount of clothes that you thought you would wear in your life and in your uniform and as you lived. But they forgot that the actors were people and they got on the stage. They forgot that there was no heat in those places. And there we were in silk, as you said.
Mm.
So I discovered that wool underclothes and a GI shirt with its sleeve chopped off and three pairs of stockings and once in a while a sweater and once my field coat on there practically got me through the performance.
Oh, fine. Let's come back over here to the old Algonquin. Tell us the legend of Rusty.
Oh, yes, I'd love to tell you about it. Rusty's a cat.
Mm-hmm.
Rusty was a cat. Rusty was a succession of cats.
Yes.
Very wonderful cat.
And he had a special door?
Yes, the door to the kitchen has a little flap at the bottom with swings, like a swinging door on its edge, you see, on the long part. And the cat would push its way through that. And above that swinging door, little tiny thing, is this other letter, Rusty.
Which was the most famous Rusty?
The most recent Rusty.
Mm.
And he came in, you see, one day after they'd been with Alva Rusty. And they'd had several applicants for the job, but none of them really suited. But this one didn't come in with any, no agent had booked this one. He just came in anyway and walked through the revolving door, which we used to have at that time, jumped up on the desk, looked around, looked back where Bushy was, sort of cased the joint, and sat down, washed his face, and stayed.
Oh, fine.
He took over the Algonquin. The Algonquin didn't hire him. He took it over.
Oh, good. Well, we see no Rusty now.
No, Rusty isn't here now.
You mean that one department in which the hotel is not the same? John Martin has fallen down in that department?
It isn't John Martin's fault. It's just that Rusty has left us. Cat heaven if there is one.
Perhaps one of our listeners will want to help out. You can't tell.
Well, then it has to be a special kind of cat.
Yes.
And I tell you, there are no agent fees on this.
No.
Now, it has to be a very aristocratic cat.
Mm-hmm.
A tawny, rusty-colored Persian or semi-Persian,
mm-hmm.
with personality.
Good. Well, we hope possibly one will show up. And Miss Wood, we can see why you must want the Al Johnson to go on forever.
Oh,
we want to thank you for being with us. And
thanks.
Here are some things for you, which we hope will cause you to say, long live Lipton.
Uh-huh.
First, these 12 envelopes of Lipton's noodle soup mix. No cans to open Lipton's. You just empty one of those Lipton envelopes in boiling water and cook 7 minutes. Yes, just 7 minutes for real old-time chickeny flavor. Now, isn't that easy?
Can I send it to my friends in England?
Why, sure. Sure, they'll love it. And next from Lipton, to help you entertain, perhaps in that new country home we heard about up there north of Stamford, this beautiful old brass Russian samovar on an antique Russian papier-mâché, English papier-mâché tray.
Oh,
and we have a set of dainty napkins from the Margot collection of Madeira linen.
Oh,
thanks, and many live years to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, Clark. Right now, Warren's trying to dig Dennis McAvoy out of the crowd, and Dennis is sitting over there with Alec Wilder and a group of pretty girls. I think it's a good chance for me to tell you a couple of things about Vox Pop for next week. First, you want to be sure to tune in, because Lipton will have an amazing offer for you, an offer of valuable jewelry. We'll tell you about this Lipton jewelry offer next Tuesday. Then, of course, next Tuesday is our Boy Scout program. And it will be from Scarsdale up in Westchester County, New York. It's going to be a father and son get-together in connection with a court of honor. And listen, a little tip on that. There's going to be an unexpected sort of a spot on our Boy Scout program next Tuesday. Warren, have you got our friend there? Yes, bring him on up to the microphone. All right, Warren, here
you
go.
Yes, we have still another Algonquinian to coin a word. He's a famous son of a famous father. The father, J.P. McAvoy. The son, now globetrotting for the Reader's Digest, Dennis McAvoy. Say, Dennis, you have a comic strip in the family, too, don't you?
You know that old line about I'll see you in the funny papers?
Yes.
Well, in our family, it's more than just a line, because my brother happens to do one, and every once in a while I see other members of the family, including myself, in not very flattering roles in that comic strip.
Oh, that's Dixie Dugan.
Dixie Dugan, yes.
And your brother Rennie.
Brother Rennie does that, and he's in the movies, too.
Well, if I remember, you had sort of an unorthodox schooling after you left the Algonquin.
Well, I came to the Algonquin so long ago that the first time I learned to write was signing my name on the hotel register here. But the reason for the unusual schooling in many countries was primarily dodging truant officers.
Oh, I see.
Areas.
That's how you happen to know so many languages?
A few, maybe.
Well, you had sort of an unusual job during the war, didn't you?
Well, I was I was in the Marines, if you call that an unusual job.
Yes.
But later on, wound up getting out of the mud holes and cloak and dagger work with the Captain Zacharias.
The famous Navy man?
Yes, he was broadcasting to Japan and various places and was credited with having helped in some way to bring the war to a close, perhaps a little bit sooner than it might have been.
Mm-hmm. Now who's your boss?
Well, the reason I speak rather hesitatingly this evening is because my boss is in the audience here tonight.
Oh, really?
Yes. Dr. Barclay Atchison, who's the director of all the international editions of the Reader's Digest, happens to be in town this evening.
Well, you just came back to report to the Home Office?
Came back, yes, from Japan.
Mm-hmm. When are you returning?
Going back Thursday, back in a few days.
Well, what's your position there?
Well, I'm out there at the job of starting up an edition of the Reader's Digest in Japanese, one of the many international editions. They're published in 9 languages in many countries. We went there at the invitation of General MacArthur and the Secretary of War because they felt that our magazine, being it is simply a magazine of information, entertainment, that we could be of some help in the occupational program, bringing to the Japanese an outlook of American life that they might not otherwise receive.
Mm-hmm. And they're avid readers, are they?
Well, to give you an idea how avid readers they are, or how avid they are as readers, rather, the digest there is so popular, it's the most popular of all the magazines in Japanese, that it's a black market item. It sells for 6 times its cover prices in some areas, and everywhere they use tie-in sales systems. In order to buy a copy of the digest in Japanese, the customer has to buy 3 or 4, up to 7 slow-selling magazines.
Well, are there any other foreign publications there?
Well, not quite in that category. There are some newspapers that are coming in from Russian-occupied zones, which are published in Japanese for the prisoners who are still in Russian hands. These newspapers are generally take the line that you find in Russian papers pretty much everywhere, that the occupation is failing and that MacArthur's doing a bad job. Whereas actually, I can testify from 15 months of being in Japan that MacArthur's a citizen that all of us have reason to be take great pride in, that he's done a wonderful job. And if he gets the support that he's been getting thus far, he'll continue to do so.
Well, how are our soldiers doing there?
Our soldiers are the best ambassadors we've got. They're young fellows now, 18, 19. But there are a few of them, of course, who misbehave once in a while. That's bound to happen to any body of men, 140, 150,000. But through just their training and home throughout America, they've shown the Japanese a way of life they'd never seen before. I mean, little things like getting up in subways to let an old lady sit down and things like that. But it goes a long way.
Sure. Well, Dennis, I want to thank you very much. This could go on far into the night, I know that. I want to thank you for stopping in your headlong flight long enough to talk with us, and we hope to run into you again, of course. And now, here's something that you will want in Japan, I think. It'll make you think of home. From Lipton's, there's a big supply of Lipton's noodle soup mix. And any time you get a hankering for noodle soup that tastes all chickeny and really fresh cooked, just have yourself a bowl of that Lipton's. Lipton's gets the makings already. But you fresh cook them yourself. And that's why you get real fresh cooked taste when you serve Lipton's noodle soup. And our next from Lipton's, something else to take along. This portable radio phonograph combination with automatic record changer. And knowing a great weakness of yours, you keep names, addresses, and phone numbers on bits of paper secreted all over your person. We want to simplify things for you, so here is a little black book.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
And bon voyage.
Thank you.
Dennis
Agamoy.
All right.
Okay, Park. Okay, Warren. John, you get in the middle. Raoul, you get on the edge. And we'll go with a threesome here. Folks, everyone is important at the Algonquin. Of course, I'm the guest. That's understood. But I mean the bellman, the elevator boys, the doorman, the quiet and efficient chambermaids. All of them are important to and at the Algonquin. But to you and me, perhaps, the two men with me now are especially interesting. They are our suave and colorful maitre d', Raoul, and our kind and lovable head waiter, John. How are you, Raoul? Well, I don't suppose you have many headaches as a maitre d' at a place like the Algonquin, do you?
Well, no. At the Algonquin, all our customers are our friends, so therefore it eliminates the mistakes and the aggravation.
When you've got customers who are your friends, that solves your problems, don't
right.
you? Say, how do you judge your friends, your customers around here? By their looks, by their acts? Let's take them in.
Well, it's difficult at the Algonquin because they're all nice.
Oh, they're all nice.
Especially the ladies.
I'm told that you...
John, Ralph, I'm told that you can tell where a lady had bought her hat just by looking at it, can you?
I usually do.
Uh-huh.
I usually do.
And if you're in doubt, what do you say?
I give my mouth up.
A wise man. Now, John, come on over here to the microphone. How many years have you been to say Algonquin?
28 years.
28?
28.
You probably handled that famous round table, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I could tell you all about it.
Tell me some of the men were there. Yes. Can you think of them offhand?
Oh, yes. David Broome, Alexander Wolcott, Robert Benchley, and Robert Sherwood, and many others.
Gertrude Atherton, Dorothy Parker, I remember those things. Did you wait on them, or...?
I did.
And you had a...
Quite often, and there was a special waiter that used to wait on them.
Uh-huh.
And this round table was called also Vicious Circle, or Luigi Board.
Luigi Board.
Luigi was the waiter that used to wait on them.
Oh, Luigi. Not quite Luigi, huh?
Luigi, yes.
Raul, I hear that you have two very interesting hobbies. How about that book collection?
Well, that's a hobby, but the other one is rather a vice.
Well, let's talk about the books. What do you do? Buy... We'll get to your vice in a moment. We'll hold the vice back as long as possible.
Well, I usually collect books and autographs from authors which I know personally.
I see. When they write a book, you get it, then you take it to them and autograph it.
I try and get it from the author himself, if I possibly can.
Of course. You got a lot of them?
Yes, quite a few.
From whom? One or two?
Well, I would say Sinclair Lewis, Edna Ferber, and Louis Bromfield.
Uh-huh. Edna Ferber?
Yes, sir.
I saw her here at dinner last night,
That's
didn't
right.
I? And was that a mother with him?
That's right. That's
uh-huh.
Mother.
You served him, didn't you, John?
That's right.
Now, what about that vice, Raul?
That vice, I don't like to think too much about it. My wife might be listening to it.
She's not listening.
I'm afraid she's. Are you, Helen?
What is it, Raul?
Well, I have the bad habit of buying pieces of show.
Oh, one of the silent backers of shows, huh? Have you got a success now?
Well, I usually pick bad ones.
Uh-huh. What's the last good one you picked?
Well, the last one is Three to Make Ready by Ray Bolger.
Oh,
Ray Bolger,
that's, you're lucky on that, yeah. You bet. John, do you go in for backing shows occasionally?
No, they asked me if I would back a show, but they want too much money. They want $1,500, and
not
I haven't got that much money, so...
No.
If it was $100, it'd be all right.
Yeah. John, what about this man that gave you a dollar the other day to sort of make a fuss over him, did
well,
he?
Well, it's not the other day. Quite often, this man, he's not very old man. He's not very young either. He come in long time before the lunchtime, and he gives me a dollar, and he says, John, I am bringing a very nice girl with me for lunch today, and when I come in, I want you to make lots of fuss over
him. Oh, so that's the way it's done. Well, we enjoyed having you two gentlemen with us tonight. It's a pleasure always to come to the Algonquin, and especially when you two, when we go in your department. And to each of you, we know you know good food, so this big supply of Lipton's noodle soup mix. And when we say a big supply, we really mean it, because each one of those Lipton envelopes makes almost a full quart of chicken and noodle soup, nearly half again as much as most canned soups give you. So you save real money when you say Lipton's noodle soup. And also from Lipton's for you, now, Raul. First, for Raul the second. We think it's for Raul the second. Anyway, it's this Gilbert electric train with the engine that's got lights and makes smoke. And, Raul, wait a minute, that's not all. For your home with all the attachments, a tank-type vacuum cleaner, and for you especially, Raul, this big, beautiful leather guest or reservation book and Vox Pop's names on the front sheet waiting for dinner right after the show. And, John... So that you can use some of those white shirts that you need. We've got one here as a sample and more coming. And on top of that, we found out that you need a new tuxedo. So here it is. And we're shipping a package of food to your sister and her family over in Yugoslavia. Thank you a lot, Raul and John. Yes, sir. As we said a little bit earlier, all the stars of the State of the Union are here for dinner. They were here for dinner, but they had to go to the theater for an 8:30 curtain. Now, that's not going to stop us, though. Just a few minutes ago, when Warren got through with Mr. McAvoy, he hot-footed it from the Algonquin Hotel over to the Hudson Theater, and barring accidents crossing 6th Avenue, he should be backstage now, ready to talk to them. Did you make it, Warren? Are you there?
Yes, Parks. I did all right crossing the Avenue of the Americas. Well, I'm here in Myron McCormick's dressing room at the Hudson Theater,
We're looking down on the stage. Ralph and Kay Francis are on stage, finishing the first act right now. But with me in the dressing room are Russell Krause, one of the famous team of Lindsay and Krause, who wrote the play, and also, of course, Lightfoot Father, and Myron McCormick and Margot Gilmore, too. Say, Russell, for the benefit of those who haven't seen State of the Union, can you capsule what it's all about?
Oh, I wish you'd ask Howard Lindsay that question. He tells the story much better than I do.
You're going to do all right.
Well, State of the Union is really the story of two unions, the union of the 48 states and the union of a man and wife. It's the story of Grant Matthews, who's a public-spirited airplane manufacturer, who's attracted the attention of a certain politician who sees him as presidential timber. There's a fly in the ointment. Matthews and his wife are estranged. They're estranged because he has a certain stuffed shirt quality, and she deflates it. There's another woman. She's the other woman because she doesn't deflate it. She builds him up. She's ambitious for him politically. The politician tries to persuade Mrs. Matthews to make a political speaking tour with her husband, and she demurs. But when she finds out that there's the danger of the politician using her husband, she decides to go along. On the tour, they discover the real issues, the real problems in America today, and they rediscover each other. That's briefly the story of the play.
Why did you write the play?
Well, we couldn't help ourselves. We had to write it. It was burning a hole in our vests. We would realize the last few years that Americans were becoming more and more politically conscious. We wanted to increase that political consciousness. Mm-hmm. If we can get 10 Americans who've never voted in the primaries to vote in the primaries, we'll consider the play a success.
Well, I think you've got a good many more than that. Say, you and Howard must have had lots of fun writing it. I can just see you two with your heads together cooking up those scenes and those punchlines.
Well, we always have fun when we're working together, and this time we determined to tell this story in terms of entertainment. Mm-hmm. We find out that when we entertain other people, we usually entertain ourselves.
Good. Say, Myron, you play Spike McManus, the cynical newspaperman. Did you pattern the character after anybody?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did, Warren. I patterned it after Mr. Krause. You know, he was a newspaper man once.
Uh-huh.
And not only tried to get a little of his sort of temperamental quality in it, also I don't have my pants pressed too often, and I carry papers in my pockets and so forth, you know.
Which... Oh, fine. Say, by the way, Margalo, what do you think of playing the other woman?
Oh, I think it's the woman. Only the audience in the office think it's the other woman.
Oh, I see. Say, by the way, I see the first act curtain is down. We're going to try to get Ralph Bell. Oh, here you are, Ralph.
Hello, Ron.
Say, what's your hurry?
Well, I'm in an awful hurry. I have to get upstairs and learn my second act lines here, you know.
Oh, you have to keep abreast of the times with the headlines.
We certainly do. State of the Union, right smack on the nose. You know, a Detroit newspaper is brought on stage in the second act, and it's handed to me, and I have to read the headline. And one of the ways Mr. Lindsay and Mr. Krause keep the play right on the nose, we have the hottest thing there is, and we pick it off the radio, and the radio's out in my room now, and I'm going to get in and find the latest bulletin I can.
Well, fine. Thank you very much for being with us. It's almost our curtain time now, but first I want to tell you that from Lipton's, for each of you who've been with us tonight, we have something rare and beautiful.
Oh, wow.
The Columbia album of Alec Wilder's music. It's autographed by him. It's conducted by Frank Sinatra, by the way.
Wonderful.
The limited edition, as were, a collector's item, and the music was written right in Alec's apartment in the Algonquin. And now, as I said, it's time for our box pop curtain. We want to thank you, Russell Krause, you, Ralph Bellamy, you, Myron McCormick, and you, Margalo Gilmore, for being with us. Okay, Parks.
Okay, Warren, that was wonderful over there. It was very clear over here, and I know everybody enjoyed it. And, Warren, there's something else for each of our stars of the State of the Union. They're all going to enjoy many a swell midnight snack with them, too. You know what it is? It's a big lot of Lipton's noodle soup mix for each of them. You know, Lipton's brings you all the grand golden egg noodles and glorious chicken flavor and grandma's old-time noodle soup without any bother or fuss. Believe me, they're going to love that Lipton's noodle soup. And now, our sincere thanks to our host, Ben Bordner, Algonquin owner, and to John Martin, the managing director, whom you heard in the beginning of our show. And, John, we've got a special little gift for you, too. We've got a combination radio phonograph so that you can play those records that you love so much up there. And remember, it's Vox Pop next Tuesday. Boy Scouts, father and son, get together in court of honor from Scarsdale, New York. And so, goodbye, Algonquin Hotel. Hello, Boy Scouts everywhere.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, for your inspection, this really great work of art, this truly magnificent reproduction of a cup of Lipton tea. Notice the deep glowing color. You can almost scent Lipton's wonderfully fragrant aroma. You can almost taste Lipton's rich, full-bodied flavor. A flavor tea experts call B-R-I-S-K, brisk, because it's never flat or dull. That brisk flavor, so distinctive to Lipton's, is the result of expert careful blending of as many as 18 specially selected teas. And brisk flavor means richer flavor. That's why more people buy, more people drink, more people enjoy Lipton tea than any other brand of tea in the whole world. Be sure to join Box Pop again next week when Parks and Warren visit the Boy Scouts in Scarsdale, New York. And don't forget to ask your grocer for Lipton tea and Lipton's noodle soup. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.